A pair of wings, the symbol of Eros Films Limited. A Gainsborough picture, a young woman in a period portrait, comes briefly alive. Gaumont British Picture Corporation Limited presents Leslie Banks, Alistair Sim, and John Mills in Cottage to Let. The black and white film's title is presented on an actual letting sign standing by a cottage. Below the title, the sign reads McPhail and McPhail, 24 Angus Street. The phone number and town name have been blacked out. The film was made at the Gaumont British Studios, London. Maurice Oster in charge of production, directed by Anthony Asquith and produced by Edward Black. The cast also includes Jean de Casales, Carla Lehman, George Cole, Michael Wilding, Frank Sellier, Muriel Ackett, Wally Patch, Muriel George, Hay Petrie, and Catherine Lacey. A single parachutist drops through an overcast sky.
It's a parachute. He'll be over 8 feet.
Two soldiers on duty by a bunker prepare to find him. From a rowboat in the lock, they pull him aboard.
I got him, Duck. Give us a hand, will you?
Go with it. It'll be a fair mind. Here we are.
Oh, these are
wet, no. Oh, these are heavy.
He must have hopped the lock inside him.
God, come on. Here's one of ours.
A man and woman at the cottage to be let.
But Mrs. Barrington has authorized me to utilize this cottage as a military hospital.
Hospital, indeed. You haven't a single patient.
Now, Mrs. Barrington.
Now, besides, this form is filled in by Mrs. Barrington herself. Frail Manor Cottage, available for 20 evacuees. Now, come on, children. One, two, three, four.
While Mrs. Fernery runs around, an older boy sits behind the wheel of a bus.
Lousy organization.
Children! Children, get your bundles out.
Ah, there's Mrs. Barrington. Now we'll see. Good morning, Mrs. Barrington.
Morning, good morning. Barrington. Taking the children for an outing? Isn't that nice?
You meant me to put those 20 little evacuees in the cottage now, didn't you?
20 little
evacuees. But we've got our military hospital in here.
20? Oh, I must have added a naught by mistake now. Isn't that silly of me? Take Fidget to the second jump.
Yes,
that's right. Off you go, girl.
What shall we do with the children?
Rub out the naught and make two. We'll put one in the wardroom and the other in the bathroom, the box room.
Oh, thank you. Yes, in a minute, dear. Now, which two children would like to go and stay with dear kind
Mrs. Children
Barrington?
Stare at her. The boy behind the wheel ducks down with another boy.
Now, I've made up my mind.
She's
come
after
along,
the two, ducking.
Come out, you two lucky ones.
You mean him, don't you?
No, I don't. I mean both of you.
Oh, Evans. Go into the house and get me some pillows, blankets, and eiderdowns. You know, the one with the hole in it.
It's my duty to remind you, but...
One thing at a time, Doctor, please.
Now, this is Ronald...
Mitzby.
And...
Tony Andrews.
Tony Andrews.
Oh, dear. How do you do?
How do you do?
But I thought you said little girls.
No, they've always been boys.
Have they? Oh, well, it's all the same thing, isn't it?
Much obliged.
What for?
For having me.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure.
He goes inside.
Miss Fernery, that reminds me.
Inside the cottage, he finds his room.
I do hope that you'll find time to be on the committee.
Of course they will, Mrs. Barrington. Which one?
The Spitfire Fun Bazaar, of course.
Oh, thank you. Now, Ronald, you must behave nicely while you're here. You see, it's very kind of Mrs. Barrington to have you.
Bring them in 10 bob a week, don't
I? Outside, two soldiers and the parachutist.
Our orders say this is a military hospital.
That's right, of course it is. Now, have you got a stretcher?
We have.
Good, well, bring him in. Here. Well,
there you are, the
Mrs. Barrington.
Quite simple.
Mrs. Barrington, it's Providence.
Providence? Where? I don't see anything.
We've got a patient at last.
A patient? But we can't take a patient. We've got two little evacuees. No. Mm. He should have come half an hour earlier. Poor chap, but look, he's been wounded. Why didn't you tell me at once? Take him in, of course. Take him in. Look at that poor fellow. Oh, Evans, take those away. We won't be needing them. And tell Miss Helen to come here. She's in the kitchen garden. We've got a case.
Miss the room over here.
They carry a stretcher.
Who is he?
He's a
he opens
fire.
His eyes. The pilot winks and the two boys start to run outside.
Now, this is no place for little boys to play in. Go to your room and stay there. That's right. Yeah, little chap. So obedient.
Maybe.
Yes, now the patient. That's right, you know the way.
Ronald sticks his head out of the room, then dashes outside just in time to see the busload of children leaving. He thumbs his nose at them with both hands, makes a face, then goes back inside, kicking a bundle of clothes, which he eventually plops down on angrily, just as a pretty young woman comes in, followed by a nurse.
Oh, are you the case?
No, I'm Ronald. I'm evacuated.
Oh, how do you do, Ronald?
Pleased to meet you, I'm sure. It's in there.
Thank you, Ronald. Come on, Betty. Come on again.
As young Ronald leers at her, the soldiers remove the stretcher.
Can I do anything about this?
No, leave everything to us. We're under the war office, you know.
I see.
Yes, we know all the regulations. Don't we, Helen?
Of course, Father.
Good morning, Miss Helen.
Helen, my dear, he's an officer. He's got the CF, the D, the thing. Why didn't you put your uniform on, dear?
Well, I hadn't time to change, Mother.
And you might have brought John's yellow pyjamas down. They do go over the roof.
Yes, Mother.
Yellow. Lemons.
Lemons?
Lemon. That reminds me, you haven't got a lemon in the house.
Are you ready for me, Doctor?
Helen pushes a medical trolley behind the curtains to the patient's bedside.
Well, I've set your shoulder, Helen. But there's a nasty great cut here I don't like the look of. Would you get me some hot water, please?
Yes, of course.
Put a double scotch in it, will you, please?
That'll come late in the treatment. We'll both have some.
The pilot grimaces in pain.
Ah, poor lady. You must have struck a log floating on the loch.
Is that what it was? Felt like the Queen Mary.
Bad luck.
Yes, it was.
He rises slightly to get a look at Helen.
What was it?
Outside, a car is pulled up and a well-dressed man with suitcases is getting out. He glances at the Tillet sign, then turns to see a soldier with a bundle. The nurse.
Excuse me, sir.
Here's his uniform, miss.
Thank you.
Evans, the butler, hurries past the man, his arms full of blankets, and enters the cottage. The man follows Evans in and moves to help him as he struggles with the door to the pilot's room.
Perhaps I can help you.
Evans goes into the room and the man has a quick peek before the door shuts in his face. The man creeps around the cozy timbered cottage, eventually finding a door and pushing it open cautiously. He sticks his head into the bedroom and, seeing no one, he walks towards the bed where he picks up a bundle lying on it.
Put that down!
I'm sorry.
He turns to see Ronald perched casually on a desk in the corner reading a book. He walks towards him.
What are you doing here?
I'm here for my health, and what's it to you anyway?
The man looks at the bundle of clothes on the bed.
Your luggage?
Yes, my luggage.
Tell me, Sonny, this is Thrale Cottage, isn't it?
It is.
In the patient's room.
How's that?
Mrs. Barrington.
Thank you, Doctor.
Well, how's the patient?
Oh, grand, thanks. I'm in very good hands. May I use your telephone? I'm afraid I've got to report this.
I'll go and ring up the aerodrome.
Sorry, it's official. I'd better speak myself.
Then I'll bring the telephone to you. Would you?
As Mrs. Barrington fetches the phone from the living room, the strange man approaches her.
I wonder if you could...
Yes, in a minute.
Ronald places the man's case outside the bedroom. Mrs. Barrington reappears.
Excuse me,
Betty. No, I can't bother with things like that now. I've got a wounded man on my hands. I've got reports to fill in some other time.
Please, but you are Mrs. Barrington.
I know you've come about the ration cards. I know I filled them in all wrong, but it isn't my fault, and I really cannot discuss the matter with you
Madam,
now.
Madam, you're mistaken. I'm Dimble.
Oh, are you? I'm so sorry. Yes, but I can't do anything about it now.
I've come to take possession of the cottage.
But there is no cottage.
No cottage.
Mr. Dimble leads her to the sign out front.
It says in that board, cottage to let.
Oh, yes, that board. Well, I meant to take it down. You see, things are all changed now. This is a military hospital.
Madam, I've rented this cottage from Mrs. McPhail and McPhail, the estate agents. Look, here is a correspondence. I've paid in advance and my cheque was accepted for the Michaelmas quarter.
When does Michaelmas come? Before or after Christmas? I never know. Oh, of course, I remember now. Yes, yes. But didn't you get my letter telling you not to come?
No.
Hello, sir.
The pilot's on the phone.
Yes,
Helen listens so, bedside.
Had to bail out and landed
she
in the
She leans on the bed, interested.
No, sir, no. Lock Tay. Yes, Lock Tay, that's right, sir.
I know what we'll do. We'll send the boy over to the house and you can have his room.
I can see you're a born organizer.
Well, it does come rather easily to me. Little boy, come here. Look, my child, I'm afraid you're not going to have that room after all. This is Mr.
Dimble.
He's going to have it.
Lousy organisation.
Now look here, Sonny. You must never use that word.
Organisation?
No. The other one. It's not a word we use in the country.
No. Think of all the lovely things in the country. The trees, the birds, the little animals. Go fetch your bundle. Oh, Evans.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, Evans, take this boy away and put him in the maid's room.
Hey!
It's all right. She isn't there. Now run along and be happy. Remember, it's the one thing I insist upon. Evans, it might be better if you gave the boy your room and you went into the attic.
Very good, ma'am.
All right, sir. If you put me through to the I.O., I'll let him have the dope. All right, goodbye, sir.
As Helen and the doctor leave, he holds the phone to his shoulder, his eyes following them out of the room. He looks to make sure they're gone.
Flight Lieutenant Perry. Is that the I.O.? Oh, hello, Perry speaking. Yes. Spitfire FJ-112. On patrol off Montrose. Yes,
he throws the phone onto the bed.
Spotted
he reaches
cornea.
Over the edge.
2,000 feet
the phone's
below.
Not plugged in.
Got in two bursts, but lost him in cloud. Yeah, that's right. Lost him in cloud. His rear gunner hit my engine. Yeah. Tried to get the bus back, but she caught
he
on
he tries
fire.
To plug it in.
Yeah. Had to bail out. Yes, I had to bail out. Yes. Uh-huh. I'm afraid she'll be a write-off. Yes, I...
It's in.
North bank of Loch Tay.
He pulls the phone across the covers by its cord until he can grasp it. He hangs up, exhausted by his efforts. In his bedroom, Dimble and Mrs. Barrington are smiling as they look at a rather awful painting.
Yes. And all your own work.
Yes, the heart of the Highlands.
A Scot in kilt and tam.
You really like it?
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, it's charming of you to say so. It is my naturalistic period, of course.
Oh, yes, of course, of course. You know, if I may say so, it fits the mood of the room.
Do you really think so? Uh-huh. Mind you, it had to go there because of this hole in the wall. You see, this used to be John's workshop. He blew himself up.
Well, don't tell me. You're not a widow?
A widow? Oh, no. Oh. John's still there. Very much so.
What do you mean, he's a chemist?
No, just nothing. He invents things.
But he's not the John Barrington, the Barrington gunman.
Well, that was a long time ago. I had to put a stop to all that. There'd be no cottage left. Oh. I've put him in the greenhouse now. He works there quite happily. And, of course, no gunpowder.
Well, I'm sure I'll be very happy here anyway.
Oh, you must. Happiness is the one thing I insist on. So do come and have all your meals with us, won't you?
Why, certainly.
Of course, you'll have to find us as you take us.
Oh, you're very gracious.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Dimble closes the bedroom door, locks it, and goes immediately to a suitcase. He removes and pockets a small handgun. Elsewhere, military officers study a blueprint and some aerial photographs.
It's streets ahead of anything we've had so far. At 3,000 feet, 25 direct hits at all angles of approach. That was a stick from 5,000, straddle center of target. That's a beauty. Moving target at 6,000, too.
Uncanny.
The officer leans back, reading a paper.
What's this? Accuracy goes to pieces above 9,000?
Exactly, but a stabilizer would soon correct that. Barrington may have intended to fit one. You know how he works.
I do.
Never sends us blueprints, and we're not thought readers.
Well, we'll have him down and talk it over.
Good. soon as possible.
From a cottage window, Charles Dimble studies the imposing main house through a small pair of binoculars. Meanwhile, Ronald perches on a dresser to peer out of the butler's bedroom window.
Is this the best room you got? You must have thrown a sparrow out to make room for me.
It's been big enough for me for the last month.
Month? I'm here for duration. Where were you before? You're not Scotch? London? I'm from London.
Really?
What made you come to this hole? Dodging the Blitz?
That's it.
Baloney. Been a butler ever since you left the army?
No.
Could have told you that.
Smart, aren't we?
You can always tell a real butler. Butler's faces are white. If they pink the boss's port, they're red. Yours is brown. You could have been a doorkeeper, for instance.
Really?
No, then you'd have had medals, not ribbons. Why didn't you get married?
Because, how do you know?
Easy. You've had to do for yourself. No woman in your life. You're free. Yet you quit London for this.
Student of human nature, aren't
we? Evans removes his clothes from a drawer. Ronald, still on the prowl, picks up a pair of boots.
11s? I just deduced
Ronald
things.
Ronald starts to leave.
Am I allowed to go where I like?
Mrs. Barrington's instructions are that you're to consider yourself a guest.
Paying guest.
You're therefore free to go wherever you wish except the laboratory.
Hey, what do they expect me to do?
The laboratory's Mr. Barrington's workroom.
Laboratory.
Well, anyway, nobody's permitted to go in except Mr. Barrington and Mr. Trentley. Not even Mrs. Barrington. You might get hurt if you do.
Huh. I think I'll give
As
this
Ronald
dump
leaves,
once
a
over.
Look of concern crosses Evans' face. He picks up the boots thoughtfully and glances at the door. Ronald heads straight for the lab. It is the lab of an inventor, full of gadgets and gizmos, various work tables, and a winding staircase in front of an enormous window. Ronald takes it all in, eventually arriving at a thing with a propeller, which he spins. A man enters the front door of the house, package under one arm, and tosses his hat at a nearby statue, missing. He retrieves the hat, puts it on, retraces his steps, and has another go, this time succeeding. He goes straight into the lab, tearing the paper off his parcel, taking out a model plane, and looking up to see Ronald.
What are you doing here? Didn't you know that nobody was allowed in here?
Sorry, mister. I live here.
Oh, since when?
Didn't he tell you either? Lousy organisation. Oh, mustn't say that.
Oh, I don't know. Why not? I'm inclined to agree with you.
I like your dump.
Oh, thank you very much indeed.
He takes out a large rubber bag and tries to pour something onto it.
You're not very good at it, are you?
There is somebody supposed to be looking after you, isn't there?
That butler of yours.
Yes, well, would you mind going back and being
Ronald
looked after
peers
again?
Over his shoulder.
Well, do go away, please.
That's not the way to lubricate an elastic motor.
Well, it's the way I lubricate it.
It's a cock-eyed way.
Ronald rubs the elastic between his hands.
You've got to do like this.
Ooh, does it make an awful mess of your hands?
What's it matter?
Well, I really don't know.
There. Now it's lubricated.
Yes, it certainly is.
You know how to put it in?
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you for the lubrication. Now go
away. He moves closer.
Oh, do go away, please. You're making me nervous.
Well, no, but that ain't right what you're doing. Here, you better let
me. He loads it.
You've got to be shown if you don't know, haven't you? Mm-hmm. Just watch me, then you will. These ready-made planes you buy in shops aren't no good.
Oh, that one is.
No. What's your longest duration of flight?
Oh, she stays up a long time.
How long?
Well, I've never actually timed it, but it's...
What, are you a scientist? I made one that stayed up 6 minutes and 42 seconds.
Tell me, how did you become such an expert in these things?
This is just an hobby. It's not what I'm really going for.
Oh, what's that?
Ever heard of Sherlock Holmes?
Oh, are you a disciple of Sherlock Holmes?
He was the greatest man what ever lived.
Yes, he did live, didn't he?
221B Baker Street. Ronald
takes
his
hand.
Now. You smoke a lot, don't you?
Yes, I'm afraid I do.
Easy. Hound of the Baskervilles, Chapter 2, Nicotine Stains.
Ah, yes, but these stains...
He opens a sliding door and Ronald follows him out onto the patio.
All right, then. Why have you got a copper for a butler?
Got a what?
Didn't you know? Your butler's a cop.
Oh, nonsense. I mean, he could... Well, how'd you know?
Better a tanner he is. And what's more, I'll prove it. Go on, call him.
Evans! The butler approaches.
Where do policemen keep their watches?
Well, I don't know. I never thought of it. I mean, on
Ronald
the wrist...
points to his chest.
Just you watch.
Yes, sir? What's
Evans
the time?
Evans reaches into his waistcoat pocket and Barrington turns to Ronald.
11:30, sir.
It's impossible.
It is, sir.
Oh, Evans, go and get my, scissors.
Yes, madam.
They leave.
Well, I mean, she...
Pay up your tanner. He's your bodyguard, isn't he?
Damn it, do I look the sort of man that needs a bodyguard?
You're a big-shot inventor. Of course you do.
I will not have them putting policemen in my house. I'll sack him.
You mean to say you didn't know he was a copper?
Well, of course I didn't.
Blimey, it's funny business on here. You're a marked man.
I'm a what?
A studying scarlet, you remember?
Well, of course I do. What's that got to do with
it? It's elementary. You're working on a secret invention.
No, I'm not. I'm working on a cure for influenza.
Flu, nobody's interested in that.
Oh, aren't they?
Crooks aren't. That's what he is. A copper turned crook. What could he be after? What'd you keep in the safe? Where'd you keep the diamonds, the wife's jewels? He might be in with the gang. What do you know about Mr. Trentley?
Well, he's my assistant. I mean, he's been with me for years. Here, wait a minute. I'm not going
to... Look here, Gov. If I'm to take this case on, you're to do as I say.
Barrington smiles.
Okay.
Come on, we'll try the plane out. You must have given her 150 by now.
Boy, you can give us far more than that.
150, no more. All right.
Two military men examine damage to a plane.
Nothing new there.
Just a minute, Weston. Look at this petrol tank. You can see it's three quarters full, and yet...
That one's a cannon shot. You better have the whole tank
later.
Out.
But mightn't they have copied this bulletproof tank from us?
They did. But how? Our new Barrington tank's only been in production 3 weeks, and this is identical.
Well, what's Scotland Yard got to say?
Somebody's been talking. Possibly selling. You MI5 fellows probably know what a crank Barrington is. Won't work in government premises. Won't stand for police supervision.
And has an assistant who is, shall we say, a little doubtful?
Trentley. Nothing really definite against him.
Educated in Germany, been back there several times, corresponds with people in Switzerland.
Correct. You know as much as we do.
Well, why don't you do something about it?
But really, sir, we're not the Gestapo.
Man alive, we're testing out a new bomb site at this moment, invented by Barrington. Did the Germans know about that? You must have this assistant fellow arrested at once.
I'm afraid that's impossible, sir. First of all, we've no proof that it's Trentley. Secondly, if it is, we want to know how he gets his information
at the Barringtons.
Going for a little walk, Mrs. Trim?
No, I'm off to Glasgow.
Oh, Glasgow. Glasgow, but what about lunch?
There isn't going to be no lunch.
Oh, no lunch. No lunch.
For all I care, there isn't going to be no dinner, neither.
No lunch, no dinner, but Mrs. Trim, you can't do that to
us. Can't I? I've given my notice to Mr. Evans. I'm not going to stay in this madhouse a moment longer.
But Mrs. Trim, Glasgow, I mean, you can't leave us without anyone. Oh, now look at what you've done, poor fellow. Now, I want you to enjoy yourself. Do anything you like, but don't touch things. Do you hear? Never mind. Forget all about what a nuisance you are. Evans, what do you think about...
Ronald abandons the knight in armor he's damaged and casually straddles the banister, then spots Mrs. Trim below holding a glass of milk and knocking on a door. A panel in the door opens and a man wearing glasses peers through. He opens the door and Mrs. Trim goes in. As Ronald watches the door and panel shut, he slides down the banister and runs to hide round the corner as the door opens again.
Goodbye, Mrs. Trim, and thank you so much for everything you've done.
Oh, I couldn't, Mr. Trentley. Really, I couldn't. Thank you.
The man's
much.
Given her money.
Don't overwork yourself, Princess.
The nurse.
What's that?
The uniform of the wounded hero.
Who are you?
The paying guest.
What are you talking about?
There's a patient over in the hospital, come down by parachute. And he's got the tastiest bit of skirt you ever saw at the nursing.
Miss Helen's at the cottage, sir.
What a peacherino. But we don't stand on earthly, not with a strip.
Trentley straightens his glasses and leaves.
He's sweet on her, eh?
Such ideas.
Mrs. Trim calls at Stoke.
Oh, Mrs. Trim, you're a cook, aren't you?
That's right.
Would you come into my office, please? But Miss Stokes,
yes,
have you
going to an office.
I brought my reference.
She hands over an envelope.
Did my brother send
woman
me
looks
any
worried.
No. You see, he's living at the cottage. I didn't think it was safe to approach him.
Miss Stokes opens the envelope and reads.
Did you warn him about the butler?
We did.
Do you think my brother will find him troublesome?
No, he won't come in contact with him as much as I did.
Very well. Well, I think you've earned a little holiday. I'll advise you in due course.
Thank you very
Alan
much.
Alan Trentley and Helen Barrington are strolling on the patio.
Helen, would you care to go for a walk this afternoon?
A walk?
Yes, it would do you good.
Well, yes, Alan, it would, but... Well, there's my patient.
Oh, yes, sir. Your patient?
Yes. Well, thanks for carrying the box.
It's all right.
Goodbye.
He watches her walk away.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Haven't we met somewhere before?
I don't think so.
Eh? I've got a wonderful memory for faces.
Well, I haven't, but I think I'd remember yours. I mean... My name's Trentley.
Well, yes, you're Mr. Barrington's assistant, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
At his laboratory?
Yes, it is.
Gosh, it must be interesting work.
It is. I'm sorry, there's no one allowed in.
Well, of course not.
I'm shutting the door while Charles Dimble remains outside looking unhappy and peeling an apple. In the lab, Alan hears a door shut and quickly runs towards it. He runs through two doors and opens the panel to look into the hall.
Hey, Evans, were you in this room?
Certainly not, sir. The door had been left open.
Alan goes back into the lab, one hand shoved into his long white coat, the other adjusting his dark-framed glasses. Suddenly, he notices a cylinder lying on a counter and picks it up, looking round the lab with alarm. The sliding doors open and John Barrington comes into the lab. Alan sees him and quickly stows the cylinder in a drawer.
Well, I never thought it'd come to this, did you?
Oh, I don't know. I think you got off rather lightly.
Ye gods, Alan, do you realize the whole cottage is packed out?
Well, I was referring to the evacuee kid. You know, you might have been landed with a dozen.
Oh, I don't mind Ronald, but I'm not going to stand for all these waifs and strays.
Oh, what are you going to do about it?
What am I going to do?
Yes.
I'm going to take a leaf out of Hitler's book and build myself an Ari. 10 floors up with a telescopic ladder. So that I can pull it up after me. Never heard
he notices something on the table.
Yeah, why have you been studying this altitude chart? Oh, good heavens, you're not still trying to prove to me that my bomb sight's all wrong.
As I've explained many times before, it is only 95% right.
It isn't, it's absolutely perfect. Otherwise, we'd have heard from the Air Ministry ages ago.
Of course we wouldn't. They haven't had time to test it properly yet.
Oh, rubbish.
To a music shop and is greeted by a balding man with a small moustache.
Good afternoon, mister.
Good afternoon.
I'm glad you came in. We have the new recording you ordered.
He leads her to a listening booth, accompanies her in, and puts on a record.
I want you to go down to Thrail. My brother's there, and he'll need help. I'll write to him today to tell him you're coming. He'll get it tomorrow afternoon.
At the cottage, Dimble greets the postman.
Hello there. Anything for me? Dimble?
Uh-huh. Letter on the parcel.
What about the house? I'm going up there now.
He hands Dimble several letters.
Uh-huh.
Mrs. Barrington in full air raid patrol gear.
Now, let me see. Have I got everything? My hat, my gas mask, sandwiches, torch, my whistle. There it is. Yes. Works.
Oh, Mrs. Barrington.
Oh, Mr.
You told me you'd been suffering from breakage, so I got you a wee present.
A vase.
Oh, how beautiful.
I'm glad you like it.
You really are a Don Quixote, aren't you? John.
Helen helps Perry out of a car.
Come on, now. Oh, my old man. Oh.
Mrs. Barrington and Trentley meet them.
Where have you been?
Well, we've only bought the things we needed, haven't we, George?
I've been waiting for you here for hours.
I'm afraid it's my fault, Mrs. Barrington. I was quite fascinated by the scenery. It's lovely around here.
Ronald
carries in parcels.
Ellen's bought me a new suit, two dicky dirts and a posh temper.
Don't be vulgar, child. Run along. Alan, bring my boots and help with the parcels, please. Now, let me see. Clutch out, break off.
Perry and Helen turn towards Alan.
Come over and have a drink, Trentley.
Charming fellow, isn't he?
Oh, yes, I think he's...
Alan removes a large parcel from the car.
Ain't love grand?
Eh?
Knight of the Air marries beautiful nurse. I can see it in the Daily Mirror already.
Oh, can you? Well, if you don't shut up, I can see a evacuee boy found with his throat cut. Benny, take these parcels, will you?
Perry and Helen.
Is every man madly in love with you?
I think your ideas of love and mine are not the same.
You don't know my ideas yet. Here's to a...
You know, George, I think you waste your time with the wrong sort of women.
I never waste my time with any women.
I quite believe that.
Dimble's head in the window.
Go on, drink it up. It's good for you.
Must I really drink this muck, nurse?
Every drop. You may even need another dose.
Oh, you shouldn't have moved. You know, you two made a very pretty picture. Nurse and patient, eh? I'm a romantic, sentimental sort of fellow, you know.
How very uncomfortable for you.
Oh, no, on the contrary.
He turns to George Perry.
Well, I didn't suppose you're in much of a hurry to get back to your planes, eh? Must be a tough job.
I like it.
You know, I take my hat off to you young fellas. Gosh, the speed of these modern machines, it must be terrific.
Well, we get used to it, you know.
You fly to Tornadoes,
George looks
you?
At him.
Yeah.
Over 400 miles an hour, eh? Oh, marvellous. Land under 70, they tell me.
That's right, who told you that?
I don't know. People gossip, you know. And a lot of talk in the other direction, too. Defeatist. You know, I've even heard that these new type of fighters aren't a patch on the old Spitfires and Hurricanes.
I shouldn't repeat that if I were you.
Well, of course not. But it's dangerous talk just the same.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Dimble. It's blackout time.
Dimble ducks his head out as Helen pulls the curtains.
Yeah. Don't mistake the gin bottle for the medicine in the dark.
Good night.
George watches her as she switches on a light.
I don't like that man. It gives me the creeps.
He is a bit of a hangover, isn't he?
Didn't you tell him rather a lot?
None of it was right. Now, what woman was I wasting time with?
He touches her shoulder.
Your supper ought to be ready. If Betty's found it.
She removes his hand.
Evans?
Alan comes out of the lab.
Is that the patient's supper?
Yes, sir.
Well, you've got a lot to do. I'll take it over for you.
Thanks.
As Alan takes the tray to the cottage, he runs into Helen.
Oh, hello.
Oh, Alan, how nice of you.
Well, I was just going to take it over, I thought.
Well, hurry along, or George will have his supper all cooked.
Helen goes into the house and sees Ronald coming downstairs in new clothes and hat.
Oh, Ronald.
He tugs at his clothes self-consciously.
I know, a proper twerp.
Alan, carrying the food tray, meets Dimble.
The good Samaritan, eh? I was looking for you.
Oh, why?
This card just came for you. Swiss stamp and a very curious message.
That's pretty cool, Nerve. Do you always read other people's letters?
Certainly not. This isn't a letter, it's a postcard.
He starts reading.
Postcard, a fair game. 13KR cross QB.
You sure?
Alan grabs the card.
See for yourself.
That's torn it.
I'm a little dense. What does it mean?
If you must know, it's a game of chess we're playing. I can't see how I can possibly concern you.
Right.
He takes a small notebook from his waistcoat pocket and writes. Alan enters George's room.
Hello.
I've brought your supper.
Oh, that's very decent of you.
Well, shorthanded, and I thought that I...
Find Helen here, eh? Well, bad luck, she's gone. Oh, don't run away.
I've got work to do.
More domestic duties?
Now, look here, Perry.
I know, you'd like to knock my block off, wouldn't you? Well, have a drink instead. The gin's over there. Go on,
as Alan fixes the drinks, George inspects his tray.
Soup not too hot. Rissoles. Bet they strained the coupons. Cherries. Well, I asked Helen for cherries. Bless her little heart. Thanks.
He takes the drink.
Cheers. I say, you must get awfully bored cooped up in that lab all day.
I suppose you think that at my age I ought to be scrapping, don't you?
No, not at all. No. I think you chaps are doing a grand job of work. Old Barrington's considered rather brilliant, isn't he? He's always struck me as being rather childish.
Oh, has he? Barrington has the finest scientific brain in the country. Where do you think our new petrol tank comes from?
Oh, did he do that?
Yes, he did. Did he have a cannon gun? He did that too.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you approve. And now we've invented a bomb site that will...
They listen to the noise. Alan goes to the door and has a look.
It's Dimble going to bed.
Dimble? He's always around, isn't he? She loves me. She loves me not.
He counts the cherries.
You know, I don't think I want to hear about your bomb site, Trently.
No, perhaps not. Well, I'll be getting along. Good night.
Good night, Trenchard.
Back at the cabinet ministers.
Damn it, man, can't you make up your mind? First of all, you want the thing, and now you don't. I'm all ready to put it into large-scale production. Only waiting for the word go.
But we can't give it. We still want it. It's the finest bomb site yet. Barrington refuses point-blank to come to London.
Listen, my son, you can't give John Barrington orders. I've known John for 20 years, and he's the most... Well, he's a temperamental cuss. I wired him to come down here. And this is what he dishes out. Far too busy, waste time, coming see you. Stop. Come here if you like. Stop. Beer still good, but no cook. Stop. House full of evacuees, invalids, and unmentionables. Stop. Thanks for butler. Have given him notice. Sea Hound of Baskerville's chapter 2. Stop. John.
Doesn't make sense to me.
Nor me. The man's a genius, but a school kid at heart.
I've looked it up, Mr. Forrest. Chapter 2 is about a butler who is introduced into a household to look after some documents.
Looks like your man's been spotted. Better come clean, Inspector.
Well, sir, I placed one of our men there as butler to keep an eye on things.
Oh, you did you? That's just the one thing John Barrington won't stand for. Calls it official interference.
So do I. Matter of Scotland Yard routine, sir.
Routine? Butler? Ah, expect John to swallow a pill like that. Might have wrapped it up a bit better.
It's a question of safety,
the
sir.
The intercom.
Get me Barrington at Thrale. Safety?
There have been a number of leakages up there.
The four men exchange looks.
He might listen to you, sir.
So I'm to go and get him. Is that it?
It's vital to us.
Cancel that call for Thrale.
Oh, thank you, sir. Oh, by the way, we've got a man at Thrale, too. And we went to a lot of trouble to wrap up...
At Thrale, a bazaar is being readied.
That's grand, huh? So take it right along.
Mr. Ferry.
Yes, Ronald?
Will you come over here?
He sits by Ronald.
Is this all right?
Yes, going on.
He's working on a sign.
Mr. Perry.
Hmm?
Look, you may think this a bit daft, but... Well,
come on, cough it up.
Could I have a...
George is surprised.
What do you want to do, swap it for a Clark Gable?
No, I wouldn't swap it for one. No. Just like to have one, that's all.
Well, I'm very flattered, Ronald, but I'm afraid I haven't got a photograph. I'm scared stiff of a camera.
A car pulls up and Ernest Forrest from the ministry gets out and goes into the house where preparations for the bazaar are also underway.
Lucky dip, don't you?
What?
I said, I love a lucky dip.
Oh, no, thank you, Miss Fernley. I never touch alcohol.
Where's the ladder?
Eh?
I distinctly said bring a ladder. Oh, Ernest, my dear. I thought you were the lad with the man, with the ladder. But what are you doing here? Aren't you the new minister of something?
Yeah, started life as an errand boy. Sea Press. Where's John?
Sea Press, John. He's somewhere about. Excuse me, there.
Ernest Forrest walks up to Barrington, who's busy with Trentley moving a piano.
Keep these Philistines away from my books. Hello, what the devil are you doing here?
Happen to be in the neighborhood?
Yes, you never happen to be anywhere in your life.
You're right.
Hey, Maggie, Maggie.
I did want a quiet chat with you.
As I know, this infernal bazaar has made this house more of a lunatic asylum than ever. Well, there's one place they daren't invade.
He follows Barrington into the lab. Trentley sees Dimble peeling an apple.
That fellow looked like Lewis Cartoon of Ernest Forrest.
It is Ernest Forrest.
Cabinet Minister was in the house. I wonder why.
Yes, and what do you mean by that ridiculous official telegram? Urgent, priority, secret, Ministry of Supply. What are you doing? Are you working there or something?
Yes.
What, you who fought red tape all your life?
I'm still fighting it. It isn't as bad as I expected.
Well, things have come pretty fast when you're on the side of the angels of Whitehall. Here, put that down. Don't you know you're not allowed to touch anything in here?
Sorry, teacher.
He turns a wheel.
Look, John. Pulling together is no catchword. It applies to everyone, to men of ideas, just as much as to fitters and electricians. We're going to win this war. We can't afford to have leading scientists pottering about individually, just trying to find out things. We need new weapons. We've got to have an answer ready for every new trick of the enemy. Research must be carried on night and day.
Yes, but I'm doing research work all the time.
With one assistant, we could give you 100. Every hour's delay makes all the difference.
And so?
And so I've come to tell you that that bomb sight of yours doesn't work.
Well, that's impossible.
It's a wizard of a thing, up to a point.
It's up to about 10,000 feet, you mean?
To be precise, 9,000.
That infernal argumentative Trentley must have been right, after all.
Well, I know nothing about that. All I can tell you is that we're trying to get hold of an American bomb sight.
Oh, no, that's fantastic. I mean, give me a chance to get it right. I'll do it in a couple of days.
My dear fellow, you won't come to London.
Well, I mean, they can send it here.
No, no, the Air Ministry won't agree to that. They say they won't take the chance of letting the thing out of their sight.
But even with the butler in the house?
Not even with the butler in the house.
All right, you can tell them that...
But you won't touch it.
No, I'll show them just how hard an individualist can work.
That's the stuff! You can come to London with me tomorrow.
What, tomorrow?
Yes, after all, I'm doing you a favor. You miss the bazaar.
Barrington walks Forrest outside.
Well, 9:30 in the morning, Glasgow Central Station.
All right, how are there?
Don't you be late.
No, I'll start at dawn. I'll do even that to miss this bazaar.
He turns to Perry. Bye.
Can't you stay for the show, sir?
No, I'm afraid I can't. It's really rather important.
The rifle range isn't any use without the animal pictures. You promised to get them ready.
And I always keep my promises. I'll start working on them now.
He licks his finger and crosses his heart.
Slip off and get me a bit of wire, will you, Ronald?
Ronald runs off, passing Alan and Dimble.
Are you quite sure you remember the opening moves?
Yes, I think so. PQ4, PKK2...
Ronald dashes into the lab and Alan runs after him. Alan throws him out.
I only want a piece of wire.
You're not allowed in there.
Who says so?
I say so. No one's allowed in there.
In there? I should think not. Why, even I'm not allowed in there. That's all you know. What about his friend, the cook, the old trout that walked out on you?
The old trout? Whatever is the child talking about?
Excuse me, madam. I think he was referring to Mrs. Trim.
Oh, Mrs. Trim, our trout, cook.
There, now say I'm a liar.
Ditch, honey.
Ditch yourself. She went in there the morning I came here. If cooks are allowed to go in there, why can't I?
Mrs. Trim only went in there to tidy up.
That's what you say.
Later, as Betty feeds the pigeons, Dimble wanders up.
Well, Betty, are you the palace pigeon feeder?
Only since Mrs. Trim left, sir.
Mrs. Trim did it, eh?
Oh, yes, sir. Mrs. Trim was very jealous of her pigeons. She wouldn't let anyone go near them except herself.
Well, now that she's gone, do you mind if I feed them sometimes? I'm very fond of pigeons.
Why, certainly, sir. You can begin now.
Oh. Dimble goes into a tower where the pigeons nest. A pigeon in flight. A note is removed from a band on the bird's leg. A manicured hand holds it under a magnifying glass. It reads, "Call meeting entire staff tonight. Sales manager dissatisfied results obtained. His assistant coming Glasgow to investigate with full powers." Or Alan's leaning against the fireplace in front of a roaring fire. Seeing Helen, he chases after her.
Helen, you seem too busy even to speak to me these days.
Well, not jealous, are you, Alan?
Jealous? Me? No, certainly not. That's nonsense, no. I just don't want to see you making a fool of yourself.
Making a fool of myself?
Well, you're practically throwing yourself at this fellow. I don't mind. I'm just speaking as your father's colleague because, well, it's awful. I mean, you chase the fellow all over the place and it's becoming obvious. Even neglecting your allotment.
But you can't take care of an allotment and a patient at the same time, Alan. Don't you think the patient's
she
more
walks
important?
Away.
Seems to depend upon the patient.
Alan!
He comes into the house.
Hello. Hello, Trentley.
He walks past Alan to Helen.
Well, that's wonderful.
What's wonderful?
Your hair.
Oh, do you like it? I wasn't quite sure about it.
Well, don't you like it?
No, I don't like it.
He doesn't like it.
Oh, I am disappointed.
Oh, I shouldn't bother about that. I don't think Trentley's very interested in that sort of thing, are you, Trentley?
What do you mean?
Well, you're not exactly a ladies' man, are you?
I'm not a philanderer, if that's what you mean.
The nasty one. I say, I've got some good news for you. I'm going back tomorrow.
Yes, that is good news.
Still, a lot of things can happen before tomorrow.
Yes, Mother's cooking the dinner.
Seasoned to taste. Oh, of course. Of course.
She stirs about, tossing a salad.
Pinch of mustard, I think. Now then, what exactly are we making, Betty? Do you remember?
How did he ken, ma'am? A tilcher can a cook.
Ah. Well, anyway, it looks very good, doesn't it? Another drop.
Yeah.
Just about the right constituency.
Ronald sticks a finger in the batter. Mrs. Barrington and Betty watch as he shakes his head. Mrs. Barrington has a taste.
He's right. Something definitely wrong with it. I know, eggs. Eggs.
As Ronald leaves the kitchen, Evans hits him with the door.
The eggs are gone, Mum.
Gone where?
There were six in the box, Mum. I give you my word, I put them by special.
Oh, never mind, it's wartime. We'll do without the eggs.
See who it is.
He answers the door.
Good evening, Mr. Trentley.
Miss Fernery enters, very dressed up in gown and feather boa.
Ye gods.
Heavens. This is Mother's fault.
The men gasp and guffaw.
I'm not late, am I?
Not a bit.
What a relief. Mrs. Barrington invited me to her party. Oh, don't tell me it's informal.
Oh, it is a party. We were just too late to dress, that's all.
Oh.
Well, well, we're very elegant this evening, aren't we?
Kindly to keep your bedside manner for those who need it.
Mrs. Barrington's compliments. She would like to see you in the kitchen.
She looks down her nose at the doctor and follows Evans to the kitchen.
Miss Fernery.
Oh, good evening, Mrs. Barrington. How sweet of you. I felt sure you had some special reason for asking me.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You see, it's Mr. Perry's last evening and we wanted a specially good party.
Oh, how are you getting on?
Oh, splendidly, really. There are just one or two little points that perhaps...
Well, can I help you?
Oh, no. Oh, you mustn't. No, after all, you are a guest. Have my pinafore, your Austria,
She passes the bowl and takes off her penny. Miss Fernery lifts a spoon from the bowl and looks at the mixture with bemusement. Ronald, alone in his bedroom, is carefully inspecting eggs one by one. Having passed inspection, each egg is dropped into a sock. The sock is then wrapped around it once and cocooned. The eggs are placed carefully into a box. Later he's at the table with seven others as dinner is finishing. Only Dimble is absent.
Well, that is all very nice. Congratulations, Marguerite. Much better than the 57 varieties we've been eating for the last few days, huh?
Thank you, John, but I don't deserve all the credit.
Oh, Miss Fernery.
That'll be the coffee. Run and open the door, Ronald. He appears to be in difficulties. I thought we'd have coffee all together here.
I don't believe in segregating the sexes. Do you, Miss Fernery? Well, I don't believe in co-education, if that's what you mean.
By the way, Mrs. Barrington, what's happened to that Mr. Dimble?
Coffee, madam?
No, thank you. He's driven over to see Lochinvar Castle. I told him the lovely story of the ghost. He's going to write a whole chapter about it.
But you've sent him to the wrong castle, Mother.
The wrong castle? Don't be ridiculous. Everyone knows that when the Laird of Lochinvar dies, or gets married, I forget which, the piper paces the battlements.
The piper of Lochrea? Mother, you've sent him on a wild goose chase.
Goose, dear, goose. Never mind. Lochinvar will look lovely in the full moon. Won't it, Dr. Truscott?
There was a full moon, Mr.
George to Helen.
And if he went the right way, which he hasn't, he took the Glasgow road.
Did he? Who told you?
I have ways of finding out things.
He holds up an odd-looking uncurled spiral paper. Charles Dimble goes through a door at Stokes Domestic Agency. In hat, topcoat, and cane, he enters another door and walks towards Mrs. Trim, sitting by the fire, balancing a...
Good evening.
Who are you? What do you want?
He looks at her hat.
To talk with you. Are you going out? That must wait.
Who are you?
The person you were going out to meet. In fact, the meeting was called by my instructions.
I wasn't going to a meeting.
Where were you going then?
His cane on the table. He leans over her.
But don't you bother to obey instructions any longer.
I was going to spend the evening at the Musical Society.
I know, but now you're not going. We've no room for fools or failures. Miss Stokes should have told you that.
Miss Stokes seemed quite satisfied with me.
And she's more easily pleased than I am.
He stares intently at her.
I suppose you know the exact position I occupy?
I think I do.
Good. And perhaps you'll tell me why you left Thrale?
Because of the butler.
Yeah, I see. Then you're an even bigger fool than I thought. You realize what you've done by running away?
No, I don't see
it. Never occur to you or Miss Stokes that you may be followed.
She gasps and follows him with her eyes as he paces.
Where have you been since you returned to Glasgow?
Only to the agency.
Only to the agency? That's exactly where they would have liked you to lead them. Perhaps this house is being watched now, and I'm here. Do you realize what my arrest would mean for you, for all of us, for the right?
What can I do?
Stay here until instructed by me. Keep your mouth shut. Don't answer the telephone. Don't even move. You're a menace.
At the dinner party.
Well, don't move, anybody. I'm afraid I've got some work to do. I hope you'll all excuse me. Good night, Miss Fernley.
Good night. Good night.
Barrington puts his serviette on Ronald's head.
See, what the devil's that row going on?
Oh, that's the piano tuner.
But the piano doesn't need tuning.
Facility, our pianos always need tuning.
Oh, by the way, sir, shall I see you in the morning? I'm generally up at the crack.
No, I'm afraid I'll be gone long before that, so goodbye and good luck.
Thank you, sir. Goodbye.
Glad you got that thing fixed.
Yes, yes, it's being let out tomorrow. Isn't it, nurse?
Yes.
Barrington goes into the hall where the piano's being tuned by the tuner from the music shop.
Oh, Evans. Evans, did you remember to put in any cigarettes?
I did, sir.
Good. You better shove that in the car now, so that I shan't forget it.
Very good, sir. I'll call you at 4:30.
No. I'll be working in the laboratory. Get some sleep on the
Ronald plate. Runs after him.
Mind if I ask you something?
Would you give this to my mum when you go to London?
27 Tollington Way. Well, of course, Ronald. I'll post it in town and then...
No, I mean give it to her.
Well, I don't get to London till late, you know.
And it's mum's birthday tomorrow, and I've got a little present for her.
All right. I'll see she gets it. That's a promise. What is it?
Oh, nothing much. Just something I picked up. It ain't wrapped up yet.
You give it to Evans, tell him to shove it in the suitcase. Goodbye. See you soon.
Ronald runs to the suitcase as Evans shows the ominous piano tuner out.
Good night.
Evans returns and Ronald moves quickly from the suitcase, yawning.
Tired?
Yeah, I think I'll go to bed. Good night.
Evans carries the suitcase off. Helen walks with George to the cottage.
Come and have one for the road.
No, thanks. I never do.
You sure?
Yes. They look up at the sky.
Lovely, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, Helen, I'm very grateful to you.
Nonsense, it was fun. And yet I wonder.
What?
About you.
How do you mean?
The way you look sometimes. As if you were diving onto an enemy plane. You'd never let him get away, would you?
Well, I hope not. Funny. Look, new moon. Have you wished yet?
No.
Oh, Lord, shut your eyes, mate.
He kisses her.
Well, that wasn't what I wished for.
Wasn't it? You must be mad. Let's try again.
Nonsense. You're incorrigible and I'm going.
Oh, no, don't go, Nessie. Don't leave me. I don't think I ought to be left.
Why, are you frightened of the dark?
Yes, a little.
Good night. Sleep well.
Good night.
He watches her as she goes, then slips his hand out of the sling and makes a fist. He walks into the cottage. She stops short and turns.
Oh, Helen, you frightened me. What's wrong?
You can see the cottage from here.
Oh, is that all? Well, you must learn to look at these things scientifically. Remember the laws of biology.
Damn science and blast biology.
Can't you put it a little more clearly?
He grabs her and kisses her, then walks away quickly. She watches him leave, smiling. She finds him inside.
Helen?
Yes?
Helen, I'm sorry I did that.
Why?
Because I had no right to. You and Perry have made that quite clear.
Alan, I didn't kiss George. He kissed me. And perhaps I don't want you to apologize.
Alan, shocked, puts on his glasses.
Don't you?
No.
I love him.
I love you, too.
Say that again?
you. He grabs her and they kiss again.
I'll go and ask her father.
He runs off and trips, falling over. He gets up and laughs. In the lab, her father is smoking and running a film on a projector.
Could I have a word with you?
Oh, hello. Yes, certainly, but before you start, do you know why Ernest Forrest came here today?
No.
He came to tell me that my bomb sight isn't quite right.
Oh, isn't it?
No, it appears it needs stabilizing. I think you did mention it to me.
Yes, I did.
Yes, well, apparently you were right for once.
Oh, well, look, I've got a little thing over here.
He holds up a gadget.
Oh, let's have a look. A gyroscope. When did you make this, Alan?
I just finished it.
Oh, well, this slots into my bombsight.
Yes, it can be switched on
at top altitudes. Well, it's exactly what we need. I'll get him to test it out.
Oh, thank you.
Well, that's all right. I mean, you're saving me a lot of trouble. If they pass this, we'll call it the Barrington-Trentley bombsight.
The Barrington-Trentley bombsight? Well, that's frightfully nice of you.
Oh, no, that's all right. I'm only too delighted. After all, we must all work together.
Yes. You will take this with you tomorrow, won't you?
Yes, you bet. Goodbye.
Right. Barrington walks away and Alan hesitates before approaching him again.
Could I tell Helen about this?
Helen? Why Helen? Oh, I see. Yes. So you tell her by all means. And Alan, it's all right with me, you know.
Oh, fine. Thank you very much. Good night.
He crashes into something on the way, then puts his glasses on. He walks briskly out of the lab and meets Evans on the way.
Well, it's all right, Evans. You lock up.
Evans turns out a light and makes sure the front door is locked. Outside, the piano tuner talks to the other man from the music shop that Miss Stokes visited.
All set?
Yes, all set. He's alone.
In the lab, Barrington shuts off the projector and holds up a length of film. Upstairs in his room, Ronald has packed a box with a note on top which reads, "Dear Mum, just to wish you a very happy birthday from your loving son Ron. P.S. It's not Marge." In the lab, Barrington continues to work. A noise at the sliding doors is followed by a gust of wind in the lab.
Who's there?
Barrington disappears to investigate. Outside, Ronald runs into a garage, the gift for his mother tucked under his arm. Inside the house, Evan sees the front door is open, the wind blowing in. He runs towards the lab.
Mr. Barrington!
The projector's still running, but no one is there. Evans runs towards the open sliding door. In Barrington's car, Ronald opens the suitcase and slips his mother's gift inside. He stops as he hears footsteps approaching the garage. It's the piano tuner who opens the garage, gets into the car, and reverses out. In a room full of men and Miss Stokes, a knock is heard and all stand round the piano. Miss Stokes answers.
Yes, let me like a soldier on.
I'm sorry to be late. There's a raid on. Buses won't budge.
Were you invited?
Certainly. As a man with a true love of beauty, here I am.
A short, bespectacled man enters.
He's not here yet.
No, I can't understand it. I thought Berlin was satisfied, but now it seems... That'll be Sarah Trim.
She answers the door to Dimble, who doffs his hat, holding it beside...
Good evening. I see I'm in good time.
I don't seem to know you.
This is the music box?
Yes, it is. But the shop's closed and our society is here to rehearse.
And I've been sent to join you. Tell me, in the musical world, true love of beauty is a password, isn't it?
Dimble moves to a table and looks around at the men, smiling.
Gentlemen, allow me to introduce a distinguished
friend. All nod
friend.
Their heads.
Is everyone present as instructed?
Yes.
And where is Sarah Trim?
Oh, I forgot about her, but
just as you forgot to inform us of the Chalfant Peace Plan document and the sailing of the King George V. Trim is not here because I ordered her not to come. And it happens that the butler Thrale is Detective Brownrigg of Scotland Yard.
But I...
And such gross carelessness is inexcusable. Does the name Von Hellinger mean anything to you?
Yes.
Good. Then we can get down to
business. He sits.
Honor to have you here, Herr Hellinger.
Von Hellinger. I'm going to investigate the activities of the past few months. After that, I shall want to have a talk with you privately. I will question each member separately.
Then.
I'll begin with you. The others wait
outside. At an old mill, a car is pulled into a garage. The piano tuner gets out, shuts the garage door, and walks away. Inside the garage, Ronald climbs out of the car and cautiously sticks his head out before leaving the garage. Once outside, he looks around, then walks to an old, disused mill wheel. He tests it to be sure it won't move, then carefully begins to climb it. As he reaches the top of the wheel, Ronald climbs through a small window and crawls across the beam of a barn. Below him are Barrington and Evans, tied and gagged. A man is standing over them. It's the piano tuner.
If you promise not to shout, I'll take
Barrington
this thing
nods
off.
And the gag is removed.
I wouldn't waste my breath. What's left of it? You see, I happen to know where I am.
You do, eh?
Yes, but not who you are, or why I'm here, or why you're behaving like this.
You'll know soon enough. Oh, Norton, did you get rid of his car all right?
Yes. You have any trouble?
No, no.
The two men leave, and Ronald signals Barrington.
Ronnie! Here, Thimble's gang. Small bloke pinched your car. I hid in the back. I can get you two out of here. I can find my way back.
I doubt it. It's rough going. And you don't strike the road till you get...
I thought of that. I got a trail fixed up.
A what?
A trail. I threw out your suitcase things. Shirts, pyjamas and collars.
Oh, thanks very much. However, well done. Look, get a move on. Strike the trail. It's the best part of 30 miles, I'm afraid.
Struth! How many? 30?
Yes, that's the trail. But call at the nearest cottage. Ask for help. Go on, get going.
He climbs across the beam, but stops as he looks out the window and sees a car approaching. He sees George Perry get out.
Come! I told you it'll work! He's here!
He starts to climb down a rope. The rope breaks and Ronald falls to the floor as the piano tuner comes back.
I thought I told you not.
Ronald tackles the man around the knees and they fight. Perry comes in.
Good old Spitfire. Show him your 8 guns. It's all up with you and you know it. He can take you gangsters on one-handed. Shall take his gun, I've got his
Perry
specs.
Stares at Ronald.
What's up?
Perry smiles at him.
Well, Ronald, how did you get here?
I hid in the car.
Oh, it was clever of you. Anybody else know anything about it?
No.
The smile disappears.
Time up.
But you don't understand, Mr. Perry. He's the crook. He's the man who kidnapped the girl. Please help me.
Shut up!
Mr. Perry, you don't understand. He kidnapped the girl. He's a crook.
Here,
Ronald,
stop
tears
that,
on his
Perry,
face,
I'll...
looks up at Perry, who struck him.
Take him away, Haney.
Go!
Haney drags Ronald out. Perry walks slowly to Barrington.
Well, you'll what? I'm giving the orders here, Barrington.
God, how
Barrington
you
looks at the
that.
Gun Perry's holding.
Think so?
Would you mind telling me what all this is about?
Perry sits down next to Barrington.
Cigarette?
Perry puts a cigarette in Barrington's mouth.
I'm taking you to, got it? Mm-hmm. Berlin.
Berlin? Hoo-hoo! Well, that's damn funny.
Glad you find it amusing.
Yes, I
Perry lights it.
Thanks, I haven't read my Oppenheim lately, but don't tell me you're a German spy.
Agent. Spies work for the other side.
Oh, nice point. When do we start?
We leave by seaplane from the lock tomorrow night. You know, your London trip hurried things up a bit.
Ronald is carried in and placed beside Barrington on the floor.
Well, that's fixed him.
Sure enough, Ronald.
You can go now, Hayden.
Perry starts to leave.
There's still 24 hours. You'll never get away with it, you know.
What an hope you've got.
Perry turns and stares at him, grim-faced.
Why not? You've made everything almost too easy for me.
Yes, he's perfectly right. They think I've missed the train. I generally do. I've gone on to London with Evans in the car.
Exactly. You'll enjoy your stay in Germany. They're looking forward to your being most helpful.
In what way?
You'll work.
What, work for the blasted Nazis?
That's enough, Barrington. See you tomorrow night, Barrington. You won't go
Perry away, leaves them, barring the door from the outside.
Henning, get on to Glasgow.
Kid?
No.
Anything serious?
Might be. Something my sister ought to know about anyway. Go on.
Haney sends the telegram.
Thirdly, your organization has been spending too freely.
One can't bargain for information.
No, but one can question exorbitant outgoings.
Exorbitant? I spend no more than I consider absolutely necessary. You surely can't
I'm
think...
I'm only telling you Berlin's opinion. Fourthly, there's this Barrington job.
There, I've carried out your plans step by step. Haining and Norton have both gone to Thrale.
Only to find that Barrington has started for London.
Started, perhaps. By now, he should be safely in our care at the mill. You see, we are efficient sometimes. It merely meant advancing our
plans. Shocked, Dimble stands and leans over her.
On whose authority?
My brother's, of course.
Your brother had no right to interfere with my plan.
What else could he do? Let Barrington go?
He could have prevented him. Your brother's a fool.
I won't have my brother insulted.
Is there time to stop him?
No, they'll have got Barrington by now. But it's only until tomorrow evening, if all goes well.
If all goes well.
You're thinking of the seaplane on the lock.
Naturally. Anyway, I don't like it. There's all tomorrow. The whole thing is very dangerous.
I don't agree. The mill is miles away from anywhere. There's not even a road to it now. May I offer you a drink?
I'll have a whiskey and soda.
She walks to a bar and begins pouring as a man comes through from a back room.
I said we were not to be disturbed.
He glances down at a note he's placed on the bar. She picks it up and reads it. It says, suspect British agent investigating you. Description, tall, thin, 45, bald-headed.
How ridiculous. Of course I can't see him. Will you deal
she hands the note back to the man and he disappears. She turns to Dimble, the bottle of soda poised over his scotch.
Safe
she adds the soda, then walks slowly towards Dimble, smiling.
No, Herr von Hellinger. Your criticism made me begin to doubt my organization. My own abilities, in fact. But I don't doubt them any longer. Your whiskey.
As he grasps the scotch, a door opens and several men come in, the first one small and carrying a knife.
What is all this? The gathering of the clans.
He walks cautiously towards the bar, a door behind him. The man who passed the note earlier comes through the door carrying a hammer. Dimble looks at the hammer, then slowly moves towards the desk. He pauses to glance out the curtained window, then puts out his cigarette as another man approaches him, closing in on him.
Yes.
He backs towards the window, his arms behind him. As the others close in slowly, Dimple's hands grasp the curtains.
We're on the fourth floor, you know.
Are we?
Two policemen.
Did I have a look?
There it is. A hammer breaks the light. Back at the old mill, Ronald and Mr. Barrington struggle to get free.
No good, Gov, they're too tight.
Barrington looks around, then sees something.
Ronnie, do you see that gadget over there? It's got a knife on it. No good for me, I'm handcuffed. But if I gave you a great shove, do you think you could crawl over to it?
I'll have a try.
Go on, have a pot.
Barrington nudges the boy with his shoulder, then Ronald manages to shuffle across the floor on his bottom. He eventually reaches some sacks of flour and, backing up to them, raises himself off the floor by a large wheeled machine. He leans back on a sharp edge of the machine, sliding his bound wrists up and down.
That's the stuff.
Evans comes too.
Hello, Evans. You all
he
right?
Nods.
Splendid. I'm sorry about all this mess. Do you think you could answer a few questions? You were sent down from Scotland Yard.
No.
What for, to protect me?
Yes.
You were tracking someone. Told you so, Gov.
You didn't.
Never mind that. Let's get on with the grilling.
Who was it you were after?
No.
Was it Perry?
Yes.
Was it Trentley? Phew.
No.
So it was him, eh?
Yes.
It wasn't Trentley.
Well, that only leaves Dimple.
No.
Is he in on this?
Not
Ronald looks puzzled. He keeps sawing against the machine.
I think the rope's giving, Gov. There's three of us to two of them. We gotta fight.
No, I'm afraid not. They're armed and we're handcuffed. We have to rely on you. I wonder what Sherlock Holmes would have done. Think, Ronald. You know
Ronald
methods.
Looks around thoughtfully.
Well, he might have.
Yes, I think perhaps he would.
A large round stone sits near them.
Very interesting.
Dimble speaks to a policeman.
Collect Mrs. Trim at number 6 Mulholland Road.
Very good, sir.
She won't answer the door, so just go right
in. The policeman leaves. Several men stand outside the room. Dimble turns to another man.
You look worried, Inspector.
Why? Why did you tell us to let the chief of this lot get away?
I didn't.
But, Mr. Dimble, you distinctly said that we were not to stop her.
Yes, but it's a him we want. She's only a subordinate. We want the head, and she'll lead us to him. Oh, Riley.
Sir.
Look, I want your help. I want the name of a loch in the neighborhood of Thrail. All I know about it is that there's an old mill on it somewhere.
Let me see. It'll be either Loch Katrine or Loch Foley. Why, of course, it's Loch Katrine. There's no water mill there. There's not many of them left around these parts.
How long will it take us to get there?
By car? Oh, about 3 hours. Terrible road.
Right. Now, collect your men and get going. And you'll need military assistance. For besides your prisoners, there'll be an enemy plane to collect. Touching down in the loch tomorrow night at dark. Off you go.
Leave it to us, sir.
Now, what do we do?
We follow Miss Stokes.
You know where she's going to?
I think so. All right. Hello, yes. She did? The Thrail Road, isn't it? Right, thanks. Well, it's one of two men.
But you don't know which.
No, but you soon will.
At the Barrington's Bazaar, a cut-out model of a smiling Hitler is hit by a ball and spins round to reveal a surprised, disheveled version. The crowd applauds Mrs. Barrington.
Ladies and gentlemen.
She taps the piper playing beside her.
Ladies and gentlemen. I declare this bazaar well and truly laid.
A small girl brings her flowers.
Oh, thank you. Oh, no. Well, enjoy yourselves, everybody. Spend a lot of pennies.
Helen watches Perry toss rings.
Are you sure Ronald went to town with my father this morning?
Positive. I saw them leave together.
Must have been up early.
Yes, I was. Like the vase.
No, thank you.
All right.
Hello, Mother darling.
Hello, dear.
How do you do? How do you do, Lady McIntyre?
Helen and Perry stand in front of tall, distorting mirrors.
Madam,
Sir, I am engaged.
That makes it all more interesting.
His bottom looks enormous in the mirror.
Oh, well, let's go and play some darts.
All right.
As clouds gather, a storm begins and the bazaar goers flee to shelter.
Oh, Mr. Barrington, protest a bit, sir.
What's it going? What's the matter?
It's raining.
It isn't raining. Why, yes, it is. It's raining. Don't go away. Everybody, come inside.
Everyone rushes into the house.
Yeah, I'll get them all settled and then we'll start the auction.
Right.
And make them bid up.
At the mill, Ronald's working cautiously on the huge stone wheel. He runs to the door and listens, checking some ropes, which are now tied to the door. In the next room, Haney and Norton are having cups of tea. Ronald moves back to the wheel, where Barrington is standing.
Okay.
Haney and Norton look up at the noise next door. Haney unbolts the door to investigate. He can't open it.
Not like that.
Give me that mallet.
But they'll break the door down.
Yes, I know. That's the idea, Fethead.
Haney and Norton attack the door with a hammer and board. Barrington's leaning on the huge wheel.
One. Two. Three.
Haney runs to the window where a bullet whizzes past. Norton runs behind some stairs, gun drawn. Haney smashes the window and a policeman shoots. As Haney returns intermittent fire, Ronald watches from the next room. More soldiers advance in the rain. Haney's hit in the shoulder. Ronald runs to Barrington by the wheel. Norton runs to Haney's side.
It's all up with us, but we'll...
Norton moves towards the door as Barrington heaves the enormous wheel. It rolls and gains momentum straight for Haney and Norton. Barrington and Ronald look at each other, then down at the wheel, which covers Haney and Norton. Soldiers come in. At the bazaar, Miss Stokes makes her way through the crowd.
And in conclusion, I can do no better than to quote the words of our great Prime Minister to the gallant boys of the RFA. Never have so much owed so many so little. And we are proud to have as our auctioneer today a real live Spitoire pilot, Wing Lieutenant Perry, CFD.
Miss Stokes fights to get through to the front. Mrs. Barrington steps down from the stage to get the first item for auction.
Now, let me see. I think this, give it back.
Helen passes something to Perry.
What is it, a banjo lady?
No, a warming pan.
I'll take your word for it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, what am I offered for this, article. No home complete without one. You warm your beds or fry your sausages. Now, who'll start me off?
25 shillings.
25 shillings. Thank you, sir. Any advance on 25 shillings?
30 shillings.
30 shillings. Thank you, madam. It'll come in very handy on your honeymoon, especially if your husband's a commercial traveler. Any advance on 30 shillings? 30 shillings. Going once, twice.
35 shillings.
35 shillings. Thank you, madam. 35 shillings. 35 shillings. Going. Going.
During the bidding, Dimble has come in, his eyes widen indignantly as he sees the vase he gave Mrs. Barrington going up for auction.
Now, here's a thing. Very pretty thing. Who'll start me off?
£1.
£1 I'm bid. Any advance on £1?
£2.
Thank you, madam. £2. £2 I'm bid for this magnificent objet d'art. Now, any advance on £2?
£5.
Stunned, he looks down at Miss Stokes.
£5.
He looks desperately round the room, then closes his eyes tight and swallows hard, swooning slightly. She comes close and he leans to her ear.
I'm most awfully sorry. I feel a bit groggy. I think it's his arm. Would you mind taking over?
Oh, poor boy. Finish the slot, then I'll take over.
He grabs the vase and looks at Miss Stokes.
£5 I'm bill. Any advance on £5? Going. Going.
Sixpence.
It's Dimble. Perry looks panicked. Miss Stokes looks up at him questioningly as Dimble looks across towards her.
Well, really, sir, you must be joking. Have you looked carefully at this beautiful...
He throws the vase at Dimble, then vaults the banister and leaps into the crowd, finding Miss Stokes. He leaves her and runs through the crowd until stopped by a sailor. He punches the sailor. He pulls a gun. A policeman backs off. Alan Trentley runs out as Perry backs towards the front door, throwing a young woman aside. He opens the door. Shooting a policeman, he runs across the patio where he and Trentley fight in the rain. The gun goes off again. They fight over it, Perry shooting Trentley in the shoulder. Perry jumps over the patio wall and makes for a car. A policeman throws something at the car, then runs alongside, fighting with Perry until... Perry crashes into another car. He jumps out and fire is exchanged. Perry flees as the inspector takes charge.
Keep everybody in the house.
One at that window and one at the other.
Let no one pass.
Hear you. You better take that man inside.
Alan! Get a doctor, someone!
You all right?
Yes, I'm all right, sir.
Now, give me that gun.
I'm coming with you, Dad.
Oh, no, you're not. Evans, take him inside. Tell the others.
Hold on, sir.
Evans takes Ronald towards the house, then reports to Dimble.
You can't get past, sir. The gates are guarded and there's half a dozen men about the grounds.
In the torrential rain and confusion, Ronald makes a break for it, running around the grounds. Barrington, armed with a gun, is also searching for Perry, who stands by a bizarre tent. Two policemen have a quick look inside the tent, then move on. Perry, hiding in some bushes, spies Ronald, who looks into the tent. Just beyond Ronald is a car. Ronald leaves the tent and Perry tries to make his way towards the car. Perry ducks as a policeman approaches, then makes a dash for the car when the coast is clear. Barrington runs into...
Any luck? No, sir. I've searched all the booths down by the gate.
Ronald alone stops by a tent. He tries to get into it and ends up climbing under the bottom of the tent. Once inside, he walks cautiously. Sensing something, he turns on his heel and catches his own reflection in a distorting mirror. Behind him stands Perry. Perry holds a gun. Barrington's outside.
Ronnie! Ronnie, is that you? Where are you? Ronnie! Ronnie!
Now listen. I'll check my hand down. You shout. Gov. I'm in here. Understand? Gab, I'm in here.
He removes his hand.
Ronnie! Ronnie!
Go on, shout!
Ronnie, is that you? Where are you?
Gab, I'm in here!
Louder!
Gab, I'm in here!
The gun is pointed at Ronald's head. Barrington climbs into the tent and runs towards the distorting mirror.
Where are you, Ronnie? Ronnie!
Drop that gun, Bank.
Better give in, Perry. It's all up, you know.
That gun, I'll let him have it.
Barrington throws the gun down. Perry pushes Ronald forward and bends to pick up the gun.
Get back. Now get this, Barrington, get it quick. Go to the gate. There's a car there, see? Tell the police the superintendent wants it. Drive it to the back of the tent here. Now I'm going to watch you all the way, Barrington. So don't try any tricks, get me? All right.
Barrington stares at Perry for a long moment, then starts to leave as Dimble parts the tent behind Perry and peers inside.
Get going!
Drop that gun, Perry.
Dimble bullet hits Perry and knocks him backwards against the distorting mirror. He starts to slide down. He stands and is shot again. Wide-eyed, mouth open, he walks forward. He turns, eyes closed, and walks back towards the mirror, looking at himself. Throwing up his hands, he slides down the mirror and falls to the floor, finally dead. Dimble comes into the tent, lifts him. Barrington stands, his arms around Ronald, as they too look on. The end. ITFC audio description by Gloria Hetrick.